Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my guest is Ken Scott Hayes. He was born in February of 1970 in Port Jefferson, New York. He remained on Long Island throughout his youth and did his undergraduate studies at Columbia University in New York City. Summers were spent sailing and winters were spent skiing, all the while writing assorted poetry and spiritual thoughts. Family, corporate America, and athletics were always in play, but writing and speaking remained his life's passion. He says, "I am an author, blogger, and speaker, stressing forgiveness and peace in our everyday experiences, for example, driving. I encourage us to move towards a state of opinionlessness as we perceive life." Joe Vitale of The Secret called my book a jaw-dropping eye-opener. And Ken's website is drivemetothink.com. And his email address is kscott@drivemetothink.com. And so let me welcome Ken. Ken, how are you tonight?
I am doing great, David. Thanks again for having me on.
You're welcome. Do you go by Ken or by Scott?
Ken is fine. Yeah, I was talked into using a pen name, and it gets confusing, so it's Ken is ideal.
That's all right. I use a pen name, too, so that's what David Clark is. Well, thank you for joining me tonight. The name of your book is Drive Me to Think, too, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, tell me a little bit about it. What inspired you to write it?
Yeah, so it goes back a ways. I found myself, you know, I had studied some philosophy in college, and I had always been a bit spiritual, and I had an older brother that was very spiritual, so it rubbed off on me. But I found that I would, you know, start with a good reading in the morning of maybe A Course in Miracles or something, and feel very peaceful and get out and get in my car and go to work. And it wasn't 4 or 5 minutes before the first slow left lane driver came into my experience, and all of a sudden, all of that went out the window. Now, the good news is I became, you know, so it happens to us, right? It happens with people that go to church on Sunday, and before they're out of the parking lot, they're, you know, they're upset at someone who didn't let them in or something. So it's a human condition, but, you know, I was able to shine a light on it, and I said, wow, you know, driving seems to be a special area for this kind of humanness, which is to be impatient, to be a bit competitive, and to somehow get just a bit angrier than we do in most other things that we do in our lives. So I started to study it as I was commuting to work every day, and I started to relate it to, look, if you're going to be a spiritual person, if you really want to learn about spirituality and some of the things that you said in your wonderful intro, then these things have to happen not later or not just when I'm reading, but now, which is all there is. It's now. So what am I thinking now? How am I perceiving this person that to me is driving too slowly or to me is driving too fast? And I started to realize that driving is a great place to practice spirituality, took this forgiveness, to practice patience, and to take that and turn it into to refocus. And so when I started doing that, I started to see some great changes in my life. And I said, you know what, this is I've always wanted to write a book, and this may just be the perfect topic. And so the thought of writing a book on this topic was born.
Cool. Well, you know, I can relate to that driving experience, and I'm sure everybody can. It does seem to bring out the worst and sometimes the best in people. I mean, it's wonderful when people allow you into their, allow you to merge, and it's not fun to be cut off by a driver. And, you know, you talked about some other situations that can cause impatience. And and then there's road rage, you know, which is, you know, the epitome of how low people can get on the road. And so, you know, I think it's a very interesting premise that you are trying to apply spiritual principles to driving, which is something that most of us do every day.
Yeah, and that's what it is, David. I found it to be that when you do this, it is more difficult to apply your spiritual principles, this principles of, you know, kindness, forgiveness, you know, non-judgment being a big one, and transcendence, really, which is just letting things kind of go, and choosing the, you know, the thought that, okay, that's in my experience to learn forgiveness or practice. So this whole idea of practicing these things while driving, it's almost like weightlifting, where if you're exercising without weights, okay, that's good, you know. But if you want to really get more out of it, you do what's more difficult. And I found that driving, and I generally get your reaction, which is I can definitely identify with this while I'm driving. For all of those who are drivers, like, it doesn't take long for them to say, yeah, I am a bit meaner when I drive. I'm not sure why. Now, there are some drivers that are very nervous driving, so they're not necessarily mean outwardly, but believe me, they harbor thoughts of, what is that crazy person doing? And, you know, I wish he would, you know, go drive somewhere else. So for all of us, there are just these thoughts, if not actions, that are generally, and most people admit to it, yeah, I am a little bit more of a not great person when I'm driving. And therefore, that is the perfect place to practice. So then we practice these things while driving, where it's more difficult. Then when you get to work and you get the email that wasn't so nice or what have you, guess what? It's easier to take the high road.
Right. Well, you know, I'm sure that it gives people a lot of food for thought about things in their lives and different aspects of their selves that they need to work on. How would you suggest that people take those lessons and come to the realization that they do have areas where they need to improve, and what kinds of things would you suggest that they do?
Yeah, okay. So and the book does a great job of kind of taking you through and shining a light on you. One, identify your driver type, identify the kind of person you really want to be, because it kind of tricks you into determining who you kind of really want to be at your core. And for most of us, it is the more helpful and caring type. So there's a kind of a nice exercise in there with it's kind of a higher self-identification or discovery, if you will, exercise. And then once you have that down, now you have to realize that what we discussed just a bit earlier is that there is no other time to be a nice person or the person you want to be but right now. There's no other time to do it. So when those things kind of converge, it's a great then time to make these commitments. And then commitments are they're throughout the book, but they are everything from not doing it or engaging in any sort of distracted driving, not just for yourself, but for everyone else and your family and the people that love you and all those reasons, all the way through to a commitment that simply says you're going to waive pretty much all the time, and whenever someone lets you in or whenever you may have slighted someone, just wave, and there's kind of a neat mini miracle in this concept of waving. But there are other ones throughout. So the book takes you through, but you've got to be willing, to answer your question a bit more directly, to shine a light on yourself and say, look, driving is a naturally competitive way. Some of us are late, especially when there's traffic. So, you know, it's like when you squeeze the orange, what comes out? And so driving is the squeezing, and then your reaction and how you are and how you treat other people. Are you just seeing a car in your way, or do you realize that someone's mother in there? Or, you know, and it could be your neighbor, too. So so there's some fun with all of that in the book, but the point is, look, are you serious about being this better version of yourself? And if you are, then that happens now. It happens when you're behind the wheel, especially.
Is that the overriding message of the book, or is there something else that you want that you're driving at, so to speak?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to say it, is that that is the overriding, which is, one, the awareness, because driving is considered a semi-conscious activity that we do. In fact, there are, you know, alpha brainwave type concentration involved with driving. So if the overriding message is more that, hey, become aware of how you are behind the wheel, and then decide if that's really who you know want to be. Do you want to be someone judgmental? Do you want to be someone mad at the young guy speeding by you and changing lanes a bit dangerously? And do you want to be mad at then the one that drives slower and just not just quite going fast enough for you to get by and go around and all of that? Or do you want to be the kind of person that kind of takes it all in stride and kind of rises above it and keeps the mind peaceful and really thinking about, and this, the book does this as well. It's a strategy for using each moment that tempts you into a non-peaceful, non-spiritual, non-kind type of reaction, taking each one of those moments and having it become, switch it from a temptation into a reminder to, one, stay peaceful, but two, think about the things you want to do, be, and have in your life. And that's where it does kind of a good job of getting the law of attraction going when you stay peaceful. So, yeah, I would say it's awareness and then this practicing of forgiveness and then taking it to the next step of attracting good things.
Well, I like the fact that you brought up the word awareness and also that you talked about being in the moment, because those are a couple of things that we really need to have if we're going to be able to lead a spiritual life. It almost forms the basis for it, because unless we can remain aware, we're out of touch. And, you know, where is it more important to remain aware than when you're driving? Of course, you're not necessarily going to be going off into considering what the spiritual aspects of your thinking are. You need to concentrate on what's going on the road and keep your emotions in check, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely it. It is, you know, driving is is an activity that is just inherently dangerous. You know, big objects moving fast is not good in a physical time space reality, right? So, yes, it is definitely a attention demanding practice. But because the nature of it does, as I said earlier, instill this alpha brainwave activity, it also becomes a good time to allow yourself to think of thoughts that, well, look, the mind is going to think of something regardless, right? So it can either think about
right.
Who it's angry at on the road, or it can think about the things you want to do, be, and have, some vision, which we call in the book a success vision. So, and there could be any kind of vision. It could be a love vision. It could just be a happy place your mind can just go to, and it's a form of refocus from what used to be a terribly angry, rushed, and impatient commute to one that you feel refreshed and happy. You've waved to some people, they've waved back, and now it goes from driving to a life change. And now you're kind of nicer to your coworkers on one side of the commute, and then you're nicer to your family on the other side of the commute. And then everything starts to synchronize and harmonize, and then that's when these miracles can start to happen.
Well, you know, I was thinking about peace, that you can find tranquility when you're driving, and you talked about happiness, and I think that's certainly a key to having a successful life, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. In fact, I remember, I was very young. I was in seventh grade, and I was going through, you go through these fears of going to school, and I remember, because sometimes these terrible times stick out, and I just came to this thought that, because as the pressure starts back then, and there's athletics, and there's, school grades, and what if, and it starts even earlier than that now. I feel so bad for kids today. The what being demanded of them is amazing, but I remember going through this stressful time and just having this thought that, look, it doesn't, none of this matters. It really matters if you're this goal or that goal. And I had this thought in seventh grade that if you really looked back at someone's life and said, well, what then is successful? Or what would make someone, either more successful if you're comparing or not, but what is a successful life? It really is the amount of time, or you could say percentage of time, if because lives are different lengths, the percentage of time one spent being happy, blissful. And that's it. That should really frame out not only the personal goals, but it would be great if that could frame out our socioeconomic political goals as well. Just how can most people be happy to the best of our ability? And so, I think it's not only important, I think it's the amount of time or the percentage of time each day we are truly happy. And again, that is a decision to be happy. You can look at a lot of things. It's all about perception and choosing the happiness. Even if you think you're kidding yourself, choose the thought that makes you happy.
Well, what was your mission and is it related to driving me to think?
Yeah, so I saw two things emerge when I was writing the book and outlining it and all, and it was one definitely to change lives because it occurred to me that way that, hey, if I do this, if I stay peaceful while driving, it's going to be easier in life, I'm going to attract great things to myself, and it started to prove out that way. But also in writing the book, there are obvious things with driving that just say that if you do these things, you're going to be safer, and everyone around you is going to be safer. So what emerged from it was this mission of, hey, the more I can spread this, discuss this, get the book out, it becomes both a changing and saving of lives, for the better. So, the mission, in fact, to that end, books are hard to sell. If Oprah doesn't talk about it, it doesn't get massively read anyway. So,
right.
So I've come up with a pamphlet, if you will. It's just a small booklet that takes the best kind. You can basically read it in 5 minutes. But the title's a little different. It's that driving can make you healthy, wealthy, and wise, which hopefully is more attractive to the person who's not looking for spirituality necessarily, or young people just starting driving. Ooh, it can make me wealthy and healthy and wise. Okay, those are in line with my goals right now. So very quick read, goes through the highlights of the book. And in a very short period of time makes two commitments and changes perception to one of, ooh, wow, there's a lot at stake here. I need to be safe, and I can also change my life when I'm driving. So with this pamphlet, I am getting it out to insurance companies, auto insurance companies, that they would like to put their logo on it, change it a little bit, put it in, their mailings that go out with the insurance cards. Just get it in front of people and hope that person reads it and hands it to someone else. And the idea is to just kind of spread this piece across the roads, which then translates into people's lives.
Well, how can driving make people healthy, wealthy, and wise? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, so healthy is obviously it plays on some of the safety of it, but also when you are peaceful, right, and less stressed, like we are in traffic or commuting in general. Obviously there's a lot of talk about stress being a contributor to many health problems. So that's one, is to make that point that it's in your health best interest to stay in a peaceful state, to stay out of agitation and stress. And then the wealthy part just plays back to the law of attraction. So in the book is this strategy for, one, identifying the person you want to be, very important, and then two, accordingly, then what is a good vision for you to remind yourself to go to when you feel agitation rising? What is something that makes you truly happy but also represents, you know, either your success in doing something, or, you know, if the goal is writing a book, then what picture visualization shows that you wrote the book and now maybe you're getting some accolades for it. So the book goes through creating that easy to remember vision. And that becomes something that you'll see, depending on how bad your commute is, it just pops up and continues, which is an important part of the law of attraction. So a lot of times wealth or success is involved in such visions. So that's the wealthy part. And then wise is, one, you learn about forgiveness and patience and kindness, and that is the high road, which is always the better path, there, driving and everywhere else. But you also become wise, hopefully, to the fact that our minds are creating our realities. So if you started such a strategy where life's not going too great, you don't love your job too much, you're a little stressed driving to work and all of that, and then you actually employ the strategy and you're focused and you feel better and you're happier, and then all of a sudden a new job opportunity comes up or some kind of synchronicity, well, then you just realize that our minds truly are creating our realities, and that is the wise part. That is what I at least would consider the true wisdom of the book, is that our minds and our thoughts, feelings, and emotions are every moment creating our outer world.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more later. I'd like to finish up talking about the book, and of course, if other things come up that tie into the book later, I'd love to have you bring those up. What kind of feedback have you gotten from your readers?
Oh, yeah. So it's been good, and I do talks as well, so I'm able to get some feedback. From those that have actually commented, I've had from young people, I've heard that they just felt more prepared for driving. I think that young drivers don't go into it thinking they're going to be, especially when they just start practicing, that people are going to be so mean, so impatient. And when you're a new driver, and boy, it's funny because on the website we sell patience please magnets. So they go on the back of the car and they say, patience please new driver. And one of them says, patience please either scared or frightened driver, you know. So you get the young people and you get maybe the older folks that are a little, no, it's nervous driver, in fact. So those are honest. But to get back to the question is that, yeah, these young drivers don't realize that it's not such a happy, nice, friendly world out there on the road. So to hear that, hey, that, you know, throughout the book, there are examples about, you know, these things that happen and some of these terrible occurrences. So there is a preparedness that comes to young people, and I found that young people really love the law of attraction stuff, just a bit more open-minded to such principles than, you know, perhaps slightly older folks that have gone through life and, you know, perhaps jaded and yeah, that's all mystical, great stuff. But in fact, so commuters that might fit more under that category, the feedback I've gotten from them is that it has calmed them down. So it's not so much, oh, law of attraction, I can't wait for my life to change. It's more like, you know, that one thing about have I ever done that, which I'm sure we'll get to because it's a big part of the book, the forgiveness part. But have I ever done that? That one question can transform a person's reactions while driving, because if you've been driving for any length of time, it means you've been a young, scared driver, then you went to a young, very, very courageous and perhaps too fast driver, and then you've gone to just an older, let me get here safe and not driver. So wherever you kind of fit in there, the question, have I ever done what just offended me on the road? And you honestly say, well, of course I've done that. I've been driving for 20 years, you know. then forgiveness is right there. So there are certain little aspects that that commuters get from it, and then the young people tend to love the law of attraction and, oh, I'm so happy I knew what I was getting into a little bit more. So.
Well, I think it's an important principle that you bring up, being able to relate to other people's behaviors. And oftentimes, I think it's the things that make us the most upset are the things that we are guilty of. And so not only do you need to practice forgiveness of others, but I believe it comes back to forgiving yourself, too, and just recognizing that we're all human. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's such a great point. I am an avid A Course in Miracles reader, and I don't know how many pages I have written in that book to remind myself. I just write the word forgiveness, and then right to the right of it, I have a line going slightly up and a line going slightly down, and I say self and then all others. And it's such a great point to make that a two-way street because yeah, guilt is just a killer of really anything that's good. I think that we have to realize that we were, as humans, designed to be imperfect, designed to make a whole bunch of mistakes. We've got a whole bunch of programming in us that says survive, survive, survive. And then we've got a whole bunch of other program that may be from previous lives, if you dare to have such a thought. But that's not even important. It's just that we have survival programming in our DNA. It makes us defensive. And to go through a reality like this, it's going to be fraught with mistakes and miscues and bad judgment. So I think we need to take this for what it is, an enormous learning experience. But when you hear a show like yours or bump into a book like mine or anything else, know that that's in your path for a reason. And to now, okay, let's stop making excuses about our humanness. Let's see how we can get this better. And that's where this spiritual journey you discuss is so, so important, because it starts with awareness.
Well, I like that you're referring to A Course in Miracles. I've studied that too, and of course one of the things about the Course in Miracles talks about how the ego can be our giant stumbling block, and that to me seems like it would be the one thing that would most come into play when we're driving initially. Whenever we have a reaction, that seems to be related to the ego. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely great point, David, is because that these reactions or the inherent competitiveness of driving, which is really what it is, whether we're in a rush or not or late or not, there is just this inherent space grabbing or can we get it. Now, that doesn't apply to everyone, and driver types are discussed in the book, but yes, the ego is screaming anytime there's any kind of feeling of competition or being slighted or, you know, that wasn't very nice. Yeah, you're right. The course makes quite a deal about identifying the ego and separating those thoughts. And it's really just it's a big course in awareness of the ego, that is there. And, you know, by the fact that we're in our physical meat suits, if you will, and that it is overcome through forgiveness when I speak at various types of things, I replace the word forgiveness with transcendence, because the course talks more about not so much you just wronged me but I'm going to let it go type of forgiveness, but that's not a real thing. That thing that just happened is not real. I'm going to rise above it and completely accept it and even think of it as something that's meant to be there.
Interesting. Well, you talk about the Trinity of forgiveness and drive me to think. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. In fact, that's a great segue. because from A Course in Miracles, it kind of jives with it. But this is what I get, I would say, the most response to. I think because it's the easiest to kind of remember and go to, and it just makes maybe not the exact right kind of forgiveness happen, but it has made a lot of people that said they were angry, agitated drivers calm. And it starts with, so the Trinity of Forgiveness, it's a three-step process, and it basically goes from one, if that works great, if it doesn't, go to two, if that works great, if it doesn't, go to three. So it starts with something I mentioned earlier and just you and I talking tonight, which is, have I ever, and then this word ever is in all caps. So have I ever done that? And that is what just happened to you, which is tempting you to either be angry or have an angry thought or retaliate or speed up for some reason and let them know you're not happy with that lane change that happened in front of you. All of these things that can turn into either minor road rage or a rear end, or, you know, all these things you want to avoid. So this question, have I ever, as I mentioned earlier, if you've been driving for some time, ever brings into play when you were a younger driver, when you were a faster driver, before you had kids, before you were thinking perhaps as clearly as you are now. Or it can go as short as, well, when you were in a rush to the airport last week. You know, so have I ever done something like that? 90% of the time, the answer is yes. Like I said, especially if you've been driving for any length of time, and forgiveness is right there. Because if you have ever done that, you've done it to someone else, would you not want that person to just be like, oh, okay, he might be in a rush, or, oh, okay, it wasn't a great judgment, and just let it go? Of course you would. So forgiveness is right there for you to take and return back to full peace. However, there are slights on the road that are pretty egregious, and if the answer to question one, have I ever done that, is a true no, then you've got to go to step two, which is, has anyone, or is there a high probability that someone I love, or a buddy or a relative, has done something like that driving? Because what's interesting is, if there's a person in the left lane going slow, and they don't know the rule that you really should be going slow in the right lane, and you're holding up traffic, and what if there was an emergency and someone had to truly get someone to the hospital? So all those things can go through your head and justify this unwritten rule. So if someone's going slow and you kind of try to show them, hey, please get out of there, and you try to ride up close on them and you bright them and say, hey, get out, and then you speed by them and you see it's your aunt who, you know, has gotten you gifts all her life, and you know she doesn't really know any better, and now you feel terrible that you did it. Well, if someone you know, know or love has ever or might have ever done that, can't you just give them the same forgiveness to a stranger? And a stranger is just someone we haven't met yet, right? So so that's the second step. And in the book, there's a strategy for this too, for each driver type. You name someone you love who drives like that. So then once you have a name associated with each driver type, which there are only three, so it's no big thing. It's fast, slow, and, you know, somewhere in the middle. But once you do, you know, you basically find yourself forgiving, for me, my mom, who I know doesn't drive very well at all, and I know is frightened while driving, and I know drives pretty slowly and may not know the golden rule about the left lane. So I can instantly forgive. If that was my mom, I would not only forgive her, I'd be defending her from other drivers, right? Why? Just because I know her? Well, that person that's in front of me now is probably or maybe someone else's mom. So forgiveness is right there. And same for fast driver and anything else. So then, well, let's say neither of those work. This goes to the Course in Miracles now, step three in the Trinity, which is that we don't want this anger anyway. The ego is fighting for us to be right and to have an excuse to be mad and to justify going and letting this person know I'm not happy with what you just did or what you're doing. That's an ego-driven thing. That is not, we don't want it. We it's tough to convince ourselves that I don't need to be right here. What I need to do is be in peace and get back to my success vision, get back to that happy place, and just let this go. Whether that's my mom or not, or if I've ever done it or not, really the third one is what we need to realize about ourselves, and you brought it up quite wisely earlier, is that there is an urge to get angry And it seems to be more pronounced while we're behind the wheel. But, you know, the Arantxa book calls it the hate urge, that there is an actual hate urge. You know, unfortunately, I think we see it playing out quite a bit with this crazy election cycle, which we definitely don't have to get into.
Oh, geez.
I've never seen such an urge to find reasons to be angry. And we have to identify that as something that is in us, but is meant to be overcome. So those are the three steps of the Trinity of Forgiveness, the third one being the more transcendent and deeper one, that we don't have to, you know, we don't have to get to that right away. What we need to do is be forgiving on the road for whatever reason we can find and get back to a peaceful vision.
Well, of course, anger is a negative emotion, and there's a host of other ones that join that. And it does not lead to happiness or peace, that's for sure. What do you suggest people do to transcend those feelings and move into a realm of peace?
That's a good one. I get this in a very different way because you're a spiritual person. I get it, and I get that kind of a question in a different way, and it comes out more like this from those that are still trying, even after reading the book or even at one of my talks is, so what are you telling me, that I should just take that anger and just down inside me? Isn't it going to come bursting out at some other point? And it's a good question, and it is not a principle of taking your anger, acknowledging it, and then suppressing it. It is really more of a process of just like you said, of replacing that impulse while you feel it rising, that anger urge, that impatience urge, that judgment urge, which is talked about in the book quite a bit, about how we categorize people and drive by them and put them in a little place in our mind of what they are or why they're a bad driver or you know, you rich this or you know, whatever. So it is a matter of catching those urges when they rise and replacing them. Now, you can accept them, meaning you can accept, hey, I'm a human, I've been doing this for umpteen years, of course I'm going to have that feeling rise and that thought rise. You know what? I'm going to accept that about myself, forgive that about myself, and replace it with a happy, peaceful thought where I'm helping people, where I've written the book that helps people, where I'm traveling with people I love, those types of things. So it is not a suppression of anger. It is an acceptance, if that's a good step one, and a forgiveness of self because the habit is that. So it started to rise. You don't want to dislike yourself for still having those thoughts. But you want to quickly move by that and simply use that little temptation toward anger or hate or judgment or impatience to remind you, that's not you anymore. The you that you are is in this vision you've created. And again, the steps for creating that vision optimally are in the book.
Well, all of those things that you just mentioned seem to involve three things that I can think of offhand. One is honesty, being able to get honest with yourself about whatever it is that you're reacting to, where that comes from. Being open-minded enough to do that, and then being willing to go the extra mile and work through it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mention also now in my talks, this is a newer thought, and it may be a subject of my next book, and you talk about open-mindedness. I think it's highly related to that and very crucial. But I call it a state of opinionlessness. If you recall, yeah, and you studied the A Course in Miracles, so it's one of the first things it tells you is that we know nothing, meaning we think we're right about this or that or this candidate or that candidate or this law or that law and all these things. we think we're right, but we really don't know all the ramifications, and we really don't even know what the ultimate goal is. We touched on it. Maybe it is just the most of us that can be happy at once. How do we get there? You know, and even that becomes an amorphous type of thing. So we don't know the goal, and we don't know all of the ramifications, and we definitely don't know how everything will play out depending on all these different factors and what could or could happen. Yet, we have these strong opinions about many, many things. So I found that just from introspection that the stronger our opinions are, even about very simple things, there's a direct correlation with our struggle or frustration or even misery in life. The more opinionated we are, the more we find our way to frustration and negative type emotions. The less opinionated we are, the more we find ourselves in a harmonious type of mood and place, much more conducive to positive attraction in our lives. So I'm currently studying that and how it works in the brain and how we can get to it. Like, will anyone ever really believe that we know nothing? You know, how do you prove that? And I guess there are going to be some steps to that. But I believe the goal is, and it's obviously an exaggeration, opinionlessness. It means no opinion at all. But if that's a goal, we can get close to it, and we can still have opinions, to get our make our way through this journey. I think the closer we are to opinionlessness, we are, the more peaceful we will be.
Don't you think that opinions are all based on assumptions and judgments?
Yeah. Assumptions and judgments about things that we really don't know how they would play out. We have, even if we did all the math, and you just don't know. And yes, assumptions are some form of categorizing. Well, judgments are definitely some form of categorizing. And assumptions mean you know the outcome in some way. So all of these things, and it even starts to get out of just, as we mentioned earlier, nowness. To me, that's what we're dealing with is trying to curb our strong opinions, be open-minded to the fact that we might be wrong, we probably are wrong, or we're probably not seeing something that could happen. And then the ego's going to say, no, I'm right on this. And it's our job, our higher self or our higher vision of ourself, it's our job to say, nah, I'd rather not have this strong opinion, not risk being wrong, and stay peaceful now. And I'll just return to this thought about me having achieved this, that, the other thing, being with loved ones, and I'll bask in that instead of listening to some talk radio guy that's getting me all angry, I agree with you.
Well, the subtitle of your book is Driving Time is Law of Attraction Time. Can you explain what that means? You talked a little bit about that earlier, but why don't you elaborate
on that? Yeah, sure. And there is some science behind it, which says that driving is a semi-conscious activity. It is an alpha brain wave inducer. And if you study alpha brain wave experiences, it's like taking a shower where you are awake and even becoming more awake, right? You're in the morning and you're waking up and this enlivening shower is happening, but you are also distracted by just this kind of simple task of taking a shower. And that's often when people say ideas pop into their mind and that kind of thing. So it is a semi-meditative state, but it is also called, because you can still direct your thoughts, a perfect meditative state and therefore a perfect state of attraction. There are two sides to this attraction, and I call it in the book, I call it a revelation that I had, and I truly did. I remember the day that I said, wait a second, if it is this perfect a meditative state, and this perfect state of attraction, this practice of driving that I do every day at least twice, let me think about what I'm thinking and feeling when I'm driving most of the time. And if the answer to that question is, well, I'm thinking about the person that might be cutting me off, or why that guy would ever do that, or why is this guy stopped so far behind the, you know, the thick white line at this stop sign? And if those are my thoughts, my prevailing thoughts, those are all kind of negative and yucky and ugly, and therefore, that's what I'm attracting. So that was the first revelation that, holy cow, not only am I missing an opportunity to attract the stuff I want to happen in my life, I'm actually attracting the opposite by not getting, you know, getting it set in my head that I need to convert this very crucial time. So as a law of attraction time, as an alpha brainwave time, this strategy of being ready, because you know it's going to happen, where it's going to, the temptation to get angry, be impatient, judge is going to rise, especially in the metro New York area. It's going to happen probably within a couple minutes. Get ready to refocus. Get ready to think about that one vision. And look, our minds wander to what we have to do at work and this and that, but something's going to happen. We're going to feel it rising, and then we're going to say right away, boom, let it go, transcend it. Where do I want to be? I want to be in a peaceful place thinking about the higher self I want to be in that perfect scenario of having, you know, accomplished what I want and be with, you know, the two do's, be's, and haves in life.
Well, for people that aren't familiar with the law of attraction, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So it is the law. It's one of the spiritual laws, you know, one being I am that I am. The second one being that life is a mirror, and the third one being is that we attract, that our prevailing thoughts and the degree of emotion those thoughts are supported by, and unfortunately this goes either way, you know, bad or good. And however you would judge that, but the things that happen in our life are dictated by these thoughts and the degree of emotion that give those thoughts energy and life and intent. So the law says that what we I'm trying to think of, you might be able to help me, David. What we resist persists.
Right.
So it works both ways, meaning if you're constantly thinking about why can't I make enough money, oh my goodness, I'm not going to be able to pay the mortgage, that resistance will persist, you know, easier said than done, but we've got to shift that, because if that same thing holds true, then what we also think into our lives positively, what we want, will persist. So, yeah, the law of attraction simply says set your mind on what you want to happen, create a nice, vivid picture of it, try to involve senses, and again, this is all in the formulation in the book. If you can remember that there's a smell associated with it, if you can get some very specific detail in that image, if it can accurately represent, let's say that you want abundance in your life of wealth, then there might be a very expensive watch on your wrist, and if people react to that like, oh, that's a little materialistic, well, you have to consider, well, maybe you have issues with guilt about having a lot of money that might be keeping money away. So you want this image to be created carefully, believably, but with a lot of detail and specificity and color and fun in it. And then once that image becomes a real happy driving place, then you want to return to it as much as possible. And those things, not only will they or can they have to, because it's a law. And that's why they call it the law of attraction, because that's it. That's the only thing creating anything in our life is our mind.
Well, there's state of mind and then there's state of being. How do you think the state of being plays into attracting what it is that we want?
Yeah, and that's a good one, because it's in the higher self identification or creation or discovery section. There's some time spent on exactly that, this state of being. Not only what do you want to feel, what feelings are best to be most prevalent or experienced most of the time, but how in the forefront of your mind is forgiveness? How far away is this thought of forgiveness from you in on a recurring way? When you're being something, you want to create this picture of being, acting, reacting, you know, the way a super nice superhero would, and it involves a certain amount of helpfulness to a fellow man, having forgiveness right there, ready to go at a moment's notice, and then of course the emotions and feelings that you want to exist in, to be in. You know, which is hopefully some form of joy is what you would choose, some kind of happiness and acceptance and hopefulness too. The mind then is, I think if I'm getting your question right, is then, you know, what actual thoughts, and we, and most of us thinking pictures or words, but then what do we want those thoughts to be, or even in reacting, you know, what do we want those thoughts to be? So then we choose those thoughts according to, you know, this new higher self we want to be, and what we might have written down as things we want to be, do, and have. And, you know, obviously you're not going to be thinking about your trip to Peru while you're at work having to concentrate on a request for pricing. You know, I get that, but that's where you get more into the being, where this state of ready to forgiveness and helpfulness is your state of being. Those two things come together to form this, you know, this, you're really shining a light on who you want to be and what thoughts you want to have prevail most, you know. So, yeah, that's it. And that's why I like to boil it down, because it gets confusing. I like to boil it down to one fairly simple but very vivid vision that you can always remind yourself to return to whenever you want. And it should be a vision that it makes you happy just by remembering to think of it. And then in thinking of it, you know, is obviously lending to its attraction.
Well, I like the fact that you talked about choosing your thoughts, because a lot of people don't seem to realize they have that power. And it really all begins with a thought, and that tends to be what generates our emotions. And you also talked about joy. I like what Esther Hicks says, and that is, there's nothing more important than maintaining consistent moments of joy. And when I can remain in a joyful place, then I'm thinking in a positive direction. And when I'm thinking positive, then that's what I'm attracting. What do you think about that?
Yes, I'm a big fan. So her vortex, if you will, of joy, which is, you know, I like the word, because I call it a snow globe. It just worked better for me, because, you know, there's only so much, so far we can see left, right, front, back, and up and down and all over. So I call it a not in the book. This is just another thought. It's very similar to the vortex, which is your space, what you have control over. As bad as it might get, you can still choose a vortex of joy. And I call it shaking up the snow globe, where all those sparkly snowflakes fly around and reminds me of Christmas and I'm just happy. I can choose to shake that, or remember to shake that whenever I want, and just have my snow globe of happiness, you know, remind me to be happy. So, joy consistently. In fact, I read recently that creator, universe, God, love, however you want to think of the creative force that existed before us, that is best described as the experience, and it can only be now, so obviously it's the now experience of bliss. And bliss can mean, you know, a bunch of things: excitement about life, a joy about what you have and who you know, a gratefulness. And I think if you combine those things together, you get a feeling of bliss. Now, I used to be, and I quite honestly, I can't argue too much with the thought that, oh, well, you know, easy to say when my house is being foreclosed on, you know, because, you know, you tell me about my vortex now, or my kids are crying, you know, shake my snow globe now, and, you know, I get that, and it's a tough one to deal with. But, you know, these rules are where you have to find a way to say, this is meant to happen, I'm meant to grow from it, and the comeback, what's about to unfold, whether it's, you know, if you're religious and it's a prayer, you're going to learn that prayer works for you, or just that you're going to hold in mind not losing the house or a better house soon because something's going to happen and I'm going to stay in a good mood until then. And then if you can just trust, and it's a big section in A Course in Miracles about trust, and then it's a big Eckhart Tolle piece about acceptance, which I think is very related. But the bottom line is when we don't allow those thoughts to let us become victims and we stay with it, then we become stronger. We get the wisdom of knowing we can change things with our mind, and we become, if you go through a hard enough time, you become fearless. And that is said to be, I don't know personally, but it's said to be, fearlessness is said to be a prerequisite for ascension or getting to a next stage of spirituality or however all the dimensions work. But I can see, I've had experience with becoming fearless in certain areas in my life, and it is a very freeing thing. So if you're going through something tough out there, and you can hang in there and know that going through it will make you stronger and dare I say fearless, it is a freedom like none other, and it's worth it. If you were your higher self in the future, and not that there is a future, but looking back, you would say, yes, I want that experience because it made me this way. It made me fearless.
Well, I think it's so important for us to embrace each thing that comes along in our lives as a learning opportunity for growth. And when we can do that and cut out the judgment of this is good or bad, then we're on a pathway to gratitude, which to me is something that is so important, especially if you're going through tough times, to find whatever it is that you're grateful for, because that does raise your level of vibration. What do you think about that?
I love that you brought that up. I think, gratitude. I think I only mentioned it once, which shame on me because I agree with you. It is one of the, if not the most important pieces of this state of being, is a gratitude for, the consciousness. You know, if you just look at, well, what's the alternative to consciousness? It's nothingness, which is difficult to conceive, because if you picture black, then you're picturing black with consciousness. So, there's gratitude. There's so many ways to find gratitude, and it is such a great starting point for anyone going through something trying or difficult in their life. But it's also great to carry with you everywhere in life, and especially driving. If you just remind yourself how grateful you are for your kids, and someone slights you on the road, you're really untouchable in that regard. It just won't bother you. But, you know, we lose sight of some of the things. I completely agree that gratitude is at the top.
Well, Ken, anything else you want to say in the last minute or two?
Well, I would say that I thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you, and I loved your feedback and direction. I'm going to listen to your show much, much more. It actually, just speaking to you, reminded me of some of the deeper things, not just that are in the book, but that I want to blog about and write about more. So I would just like to say thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Tell me what your next book's going to be.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this opinionlessness book, and I'm thinking that might be a good title or it might not. But this whole thought of realizing that our opinions can be hurting us, and maybe a strategy for curbing opinions and experimenting with the joy of not always having a horse in the race, if you will. And so I've already begun studying that. I would love to get that done at some point, and I'd love to continue kind of spreading the driving as a great place to practice this stuff to all these insurance companies. I think it'll be great for them. I think it'll reduce incidents and accidents for their insureds. I think fleets can benefit from having their drivers of UPS trucks just thinking happy thoughts more often while they're driving, and I'd love to spread the word that way.
Well, thank you, Ken. You've delivered some important messages today, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with you.
Thank you very much for having me on again. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
My pleasure. So once again, we come to a close. Now let's pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, Ken.